come. I would like to tell you about something that was developed over the last 1 or 2 years together with my student, Daniela Frauchiger. And I should also acknowledge yesterday's discussion with Lydia Del Rio, who provided an interesting example with which I will start today. So the question I would like to analyze is a question about the kind of consistency or self-consistency of quantum mechanics. And I will just formulate it in a slightly bold way and ask, is quantum theory self-consistent? So that's kind of a question we would like to study. And of course, it will have several facets, but what I will essentially show is that under certain assumptions that one may naively make, it's not self-consistent. Okay, so the whole idea that underlies the approach here is to somehow reason about other people's reasoning. And so in some way, I want to use the knowledge of others to draw conclusions about things that concern me. And for that, I would like to start with a purely classical example that has nothing to do with quantum mechanics, just to show you that reasoning about other people's knowledge may be very useful, or at least can help me make conclusions. Let's assume we have here a little island. And on this island, we have several inhabitants, whom I will call A for Alice, Bob, Charlie, and so on. And let's assume that a new visitor comes to this island, D. Now, this visitor is informed that there is a special rule governing this island. And the rule is that everyone who realizes that he has blue eyes has to leave the island on the next day. That's the rule. OK, so this guy D is now told that there is this rule. And his first reaction is, oh, this is strange because I see people with blue eyes on this island. OK, so then this guy stays here. And what happens is that on the next morning, no one leaves the island. People are still there. But then on day two, Alice and Charlie leave. And when we have a look, we'll see that these two guys have blue eyes. On the second day, they realize they have blue eyes. What was happening? What was going on? So let's take the situation where we know Alice and Charlie had blue eyes. The assumption is, of course, that people initially didn't know their own color of their eyes. The island has no mirrors, and no one told them before how they look like. So Alice initially doesn't know whether she has blue eyes. But she gets informed by the visitor that someone has blue eyes. So what's the reasoning of Alice on the, let's say, on the day, let's call that day zero, when the visitor arrives? Her reasoning is that, oh, I see another person on the island, namely Charlie, who has blue eyes. So the statement that D makes, namely that someone has blue eyes, is anyway true, independently of whether I, Alice, have blue eyes or not. So on day one, Alice says, C has blue eyes, or that's what she knows. And I could or could not have blue eyes. But what is her reasoning on day one? On day one, Alice gets an additional piece of information, namely the information that no one else left the island. In particular, Charlie didn't leave the island. What does this tell her? So Alice now knows, that Charlie must also have seen someone with blue eyes. And this can only be her, because she also sees that the other two, B and D, don't have blue eyes. So Alice's conclusion on day one is that C knows that A has blue eyes. And that's all A's reasoning, so what I wrote. And now what Alice has to do is to, of course, conclude from that, I mean, that I have blue eyes. And she believed the island as the rule prescribes on the next day. So what this example nicely shows is that Alice can only decide about or acquire certain knowledge via reasoning about other people's knowledge. And that's, in some way, so far there was nothing paradoxical and also nothing quantum. It's just to illustrate that point. But the question I would like to ask is, if we try to do the same thing in quantum mechanics, so if we let people reason via quantum theory, is it allowed to make steps like this one? You see, here is kind of a non-trivial step that Alice knows that C knows that A has blue eyes, and she makes a step to conclude from that that she has blue eyes. Okay, so that was just a slightly long introduction. Let me now start with the actual thought experiment that will show that there's a problem, or it's at least non-trivial to do this reasoning in quantum theory. I would say it's actually highly problematic to do it. I will now draw or show an experiment that starts in the same way as Wigner's friend experiment that you may know of. And I will then add certain elements to this experiment to reach a more interesting conclusion than one can probably from the basic version. So, let me start with this thing here. So I will draw here, what I draw here is a lab. That's an isolated lab. And in this lab is a friend, namely Wigner's friend. And what this friend does is he measures a spin that is given to him, which is given in a superposition. And then in the usual Wigner's friend experiment, one reasons about what does this friend see, is he still in the superposition, and so on. So it's kind of the summary of the experiment is it's the Schrödinger cat experiment where the cat is replaced by a friend. But I will now extend this experiment and first in a very trivial way. I will consider an experiment where we have two friends. One is called F1 and the other one is called F2. And we will draw this a little bit larger because there will be things I have to add to F1 later. And I will also, when I now draw things into this picture, I will so the position here indicates the time at which things happen. So I will kind of assume that time here goes to the right. So the experiment proceeds as follows. It's first the basic version. The basic version is that the friend prepares a spin particle in a certain state, which I call spin right. And this spin right state should, by convention, just be a superposition of spin up and spin down. Now I assume that the lab of friend one is perfectly isolated, except for one possibility to send that spin to friend two's labs, which is also perfectly isolated, except for the fact that friend two can receive that spin. What friend two does is to measure that spin. So the spin is now in friend two's lab. And that spin will now be measured with respect to the up-down basis. I will draw that in that way here. And I get an outcome of this measurement, which I will call set. And for reasons that may become clear later, I want to make a distinction between the name of these states and the outcomes. I will call the outcomes 1/2, +1/2, and -1/2, corresponding to up and down. So that's what friend two does. And for the moment, let's just leave it with that and see what we can already say about that experiment. So in some way, we could say that if, because this state here was prepared has been right, it's a superposition of up and down. And if this lab here is perfectly isolated, then from an outside view, the state of this lab is probably still a pure state, which is in a superposition of what would have happened if the spin was up and if the spin was down. And so what I will do later is to describe the whole evolution that this happens here as a unitary U. So this will just describe how, what happens here in the lab, but from an outside perspective. Now we'll just make a convention. So I will define the state, just a definition, a state which I call plus 1/2 of F2 as this unitary, or maybe it's more precise in isometry, applied to a spin state up. So this state is just defined as the state of the whole lab of F2 in the case where the spin that would be given in, provided to the lab would be spin up. And of course I can do the same thing for spin down, so I call minus F half the state of the entire lab in the case where the spin that would be fed into the lab is spin down. The real spin that was fed into the lab is of course a superposition, so I will just have superposition of these states at the end of the day. And that will now be exploited in the next step. So what I add to this experiment, and that's an idea by David Deutsch, is to kind of continue the experiment and do a measurement essentially in the superposition basis. So there will now be a measurement applied to the entire lab. And this measurement will, so I will again draw a measurement device. This measurement will be with respect to a basis whose basis element I call, for again for reasons that will become clear later, OK and fail. So this is a basis for the whole lab. And this basis elements are defined as follows. The OK state of the F2 lab is just the state that arises as a superposition of this state 1/2 of the lab and minus 1/2. So it's just an equal superposition with a minus sign. And the fail state is orthogonal to that. So it has a plus sign in between. Here. Please, yes? Yeah, thanks for the question. The question is that the basis? No, actually I said it's a basis, but this is wrong. I should just say it's the basis of the subspace that is relevant for this experiment. So it's not a basis for the whole system. So thanks for the question. So also maybe strictly speaking, one could say that the U is actually an isometry that embeds this thing into the larger space, and these are just two orthogonal vectors of that space. That's another way of saying that. Okay, let's now assume we do that measurement, and let's call the outcome W. I call it W because I will assume that the person doing that measurement is, as in the original Wigner's friend experiment, is Wigner. So that's the idea of the Wigner's friend experiment. Wigner puts his friend into a lab and then measures at the end the whole lab. And so this W will now have a value, either fail or okay. Now in this particular case that I drew, we can actually make a statement about what that value will be. And it's very easy to get that statement because as I told you before, what we will have is that U applied to spin right will by definition just of course give superposition of what happens when it's up or down. So it's just that state here. And that state is, by definition, the state which I called fail. So in other words, we know essentially that if this state here is prepared, the outcome here will be fail with certainty. That's what quantum mechanics tells us. Of course, here I make some assumptions about quantum mechanics which are non-trivial, namely that quantum theory applies to a huge system that includes observers themselves. But if we accept that for the moment, then this is just essentially a prediction of what one could call standard or textbook quantum mechanics, but applied to arbitrary systems. Okay, I hope so far things are clear. Please ask if things are unclear up to this point. But up to this point, this is essentially just a description of the Deutsch version of Wigner's friend experiment. That's exactly what he does, except that he doesn't explicitly talk about this friend one here. Okay, now I will start to extend the experiment. And the extension I'm going to do will first of all involve a change here in this preparation system. So I will assume that friend one, rather than always preparing a spin right, will make the decision on what he prepares depending on the output of a random number generator. And I will assume that this random number generator could think of a coin. And this coin has two sides, heads and tails, but it's a biased coin. So heads has probability 1/3 and tails has probability 2/3. And I could implement that thing by preparing a state in the, of this form and measure that state with respect to the head-tail basis, of course. And then, of course, according, again, to standard quantum theory, I will get both outcomes with the corresponding probabilities. And I will call that outcome R. And now I will put up a rule. And the rule is that whenever R is tail, then the state should indeed be that state pointing to the right. However, if R is head, then the state that is prepared should be the state pointing down. That's just the rule that friend one should follow when he's doing the experiment. And by the way, I'm here assuming that everyone trusts each other, so this is not an adversarial setting, so F1 does that. It just follows that rule. Now I can do a first analysis. I think I will just, this is probably easy to remember. I will just erase this part here and make a third statement about what quantum mechanics tells us about certain relations between values. And the first thing I can say, which I call statement quantum mechanic one, is a statement that I essentially made already before. Before I said, if we prepare that state, then the outcome here will be fail. And I will just write that down in the following form. I will say that if R is equal to tail, which is exactly, then the case when the state is prepared, then, and now I will be specific and say F1, this value is only known or visible to F1, so I have to be careful about who sees what. So if R is tail, then F1 knows that the outcome here, W will be fail, that Wigner sees. I mean, I could maybe even more be specific, and that Wigner sees W equal to fail. That's a statement that I think is just the same statement that I made before. I just did it now in slightly different terms, and we will use it later. But I can also make statements from the viewpoint. And that's important. I now take different viewpoints. So I can now make a statement from the viewpoint of friend two. And the statement from the viewpoint of friend two could, for example, be the following, namely that if Z is equal to 1/2, then F2 knows also something about what F1 did. Namely, F2 now knows that F1 will have made the choice R equal tail. That's also obvious. So that R is equal to tail because of the following reasoning. So if Z is 1/2, then it cannot be that the state was this one, because if this state here was prepared, he would never have seen one half. So in other words, he can conclude that R must have been tailed. So we can here make this statement, quantum mechanics, which I call quantum mechanics 2, which is essentially a statement about what F2 can infer about the knowledge of F1. OK, so now we are already halfway. There's a second addition I now put onto this experiment, which is, so far it was still essentially Wigner's friend experiment, except that I make this choice here which state I prepare. But now I will add something which will make a difference in our analysis. I will assume that Wigner has an assistant, and this assistant carries out a measurement on the friend 1 lab. So the whole lab of F1 will also be subject to a measurement, and it will also be subject to a measurement in a basis which I call OK F1 and fail F1. And this outcome I will call X. So I have to define again what OK and fail mean. So OK, it's defined as in the previous case. OK fail 1 will essentially be the state that arises from having the case where R. So let me call that state hit the state of the entire lab of F1 if the measurement outcome of the coin was hit. And then I have also an outcome if a state corresponding to the tail outcome. And I will again define OK as the superposition with a negative sign. And the success state I will define as the state with a positive sign. So the first thing to notice is that according to standard quantum theory, there is no change in these statements that I can make here. So in some way, what I did here is to add something that happened, for example, after this measurement. So as I said, time goes in this direction. So this measurement is carried out after this measurement was carried out. So this statement QM2 is not affected at all. Also, according to standard quantum theory, once F1 has prepared the state, he doesn't touch the state any longer. So it should be irrelevant what happens to his system. But I stress it, it's according to standard quantum theory. And if you have a different, let's say, Bohmian mechanics, you may come to a different conclusion. But quantum theory tells us once I have prepared the state in a certain way, I can just look at the evolution of the system. And then if I come to a conclusion, this conclusion doesn't depend on what else happens to the person who prepared the state. It would also be strange if it depended on that. We could probably not really make predictions in that case. OK, now what I want to do is to to make statements similar to these two from the point of view of assistant. And so in order to do that, I would like to consider the state of the system essentially at this point. So if time goes like that, I could somehow draw a line here and say this is the system, the total system consisting of F1 and the spin is in some state psi, which I call psi F1 and S. And what is this state psi F1 S? This is very easy to write down. This state is just so we can just start with the experiment. So I said with probability or with amplitude 1 over 3, hat was prepared. So the state of F1 will be hat. And in that case, the spin was the spin down that F1 prepared. That's just a prescription that the protocol gives. And then there is the other variant that tail was obtained. And in that case, the spin that was prepared was the spin to the right. And now I can write this in a different, I can insert the definition of what it means that spin is to the right. And I get a slightly different expression, namely that I have head and then spin down plus, and this can now be split into up and down. So I have tail and spin down plus tail and spin up. So the only thing I did here is to write spin right as spin up plus spin down. And the final thing I'm doing is another trivial transformation. I just insert the definition of the basis, which I called fail. And I said before that fail is head plus tail. That's written here. Head plus tail is the fail basis. So I can write here, I can write this whole thing as fail, tensor spin down, plus with amplitude 1/3, I will have tail, tensor spin up. Okay. That's all I need to do my analysis. I mean, that's kind of what can I say from that? So now I will no longer use this thing. I can now write my statement that I will call QM3. And the statement will be the following. QM3 is the statement that if X is okay, so if the outcome of this measurement was okay, then the assistant who did this measurement knows that F2 has seen Z equal to plus 1/2. So why is this the case? You just have to look at that state here. And what I'm claiming here is that if X is okay, then it cannot be that the spin was down. And you can just see that by projecting this whole state towards a projector along okay and spin down, and you will see it will have no overlap. So if I project this, so this state here is orthogonal to the state okay down. That's easy to see because this component here is orthogonal because fail is orthogonal to okay, and this thing is orthogonal to that because spin up is orthogonal to spin down. So in other words, okay spin down cannot occur, which means that if I see okay here, then the spin must have been up. Now let me add a fourth statement which can be derived in exactly the same way, and I will not show this derivation because it's, I mean, it's almost trivial to see, but just for time reasons. Namely that the probability of the event that W and X are both okay is not zero, it's strictly positive. Okay. That's now all we need to know. So once you agree with this, so far, I've just used quantum mechanics from different persons' perspectives. And what I'm now going to do is to put these statements together in a certain way. But the first thing I should add is that let's now assume that this whole experiment that I described is carried out. And if X and W are not both equal to OK, the whole experiment is just going to be repeated. So all these four parties repeat the experiment up to the point where X and W is okay. So we will now make an argument. And I start with the following thing. So let the rule quantum mechanics 4 allows me to say that at some point this will happen. So it will at some point happen that W and X will be okay because this has positive probability. I just have to repeat the whole experiment. So, and at some point I will be in that thing. So there is a round of the experiment. There exists a round of the execution where in which the following is true, in which Wigner sees that W is okay. And let's assume, I mean, in order to decide whether they have to repeat, the assistant, of course, has to tell Wigner what his outcome was. So Wigner will also know that X is okay. So as right here, and is told, and or is knows, because the assistant told him that X is equal to okay as well. So that's just justified by assumption quantum mechanics 4. So quantum mechanics 4 tells us this will happen. Now it's obvious what I'm going to do. I will now combine that with quantum mechanics 3. And this is just a purely logical combination, so I will not use anything else rather than saying that if we know that the assistant has seen OK, then we also know that the assistant knows that F2 has seen Z is equal to 1/2. So I will now drop this first, this introductory thing. I will just say that Wigner also knows that the assistant knows that Z is equal to 1/2. This is just combining this plus this statement here. And I can now continue in the same way with quantum mechanics too, with this assumption, which leads me to the conclusion that Wigner knows, and now it gets probably boring, but that the assistant knows that F2 knows that R was equal to tail. And okay, the last step is probably also clear, but let me write it down because this is now or I will maybe write it down in an abbreviated way. Wigner knows, and then there is the whole chain of other people, but at the rest, at the very end is F, he knows that F1, and I write here maybe to be precise, I could write new, because I'm referring to what he knew at the point when he saw this thing, that Wigner has seen or has seen W equal to fail. That follows by adding this part here. Okay, so now I will add two further steps to this argument. And these steps are just there to make very precise what's now going on or how I could possibly reach a contradiction. So I will add a further step and I will say that this step is kind of implied by an assumption which I call single word. And what does this assumption mean? This assumption means that if I know that W is fail, then I know it was not okay. So this essentially means there is only one outcome. Either it's fail or okay, but it cannot be both. So if I make this assumption, I can write down the whole statement again, but I can replace the last part here, that F1 knew that Wigner has seen or has not seen, yeah, I could write it like, so it's not okay. Maybe I write it like, has not seen W is okay. And now we will make the last step, which closes this kind of circle to what I told you at the beginning. Now we will assume that a self-consistent reasoning, I call that assumption, this is an assumption, to be clear, so that the self-consistent reasoning about other people's reasoning is allowed. So what does this tell me? This tells me that if Wigner knows that friend one knew something, then he also knows that. So let me now write this statement more precisely. At the end, I know that I can now, let me add what I had at the very beginning, that Wigner has seen, he has seen W was okay, and knows that W is not okay. That follows now by contracting this knowledge that others have and promoting it to his own knowledge, which is, of course, a contradiction. And that kind of concludes this short analysis. But let me quickly now summarize what I did again. So what I did is I analyzed this thought experiment from different parties' perspective, and I made statements which are always explicitly mentioning who knows what. So for example, I make explicit that here it's the assistant who knows something. And then I'm combining these statements with two other assumptions, namely the assumption that we only see usually one thing and not two values at the same time, which is this assumption here. And I make a further assumption, which is the one that I told you at the beginning, that, and I will, maybe I have to write it down again later, but which is essentially the assumption that if I know, for example, let's say, I know that John knows something, and I trust his judgment. So here, as I said, we trust that people use the theory correctly, in this case, quantum mechanics. So I know John knows quantum mechanics extremely well, and I know that he knows that this outcome here is not okay. Then the assumption here is that I can then conclude that indeed this outcome was not okay. So it's essentially just saying that I can learn from him. And so if we combine these things, we get a contradiction, which means that one of the, so the conclusion, that's bottom line of why I'm telling you all that, is the following. The conclusion of all that is that one out of the assumption QM124, which, or the single world assumption, or the self-consistent reasoning assumption has to be wrong, or is wrong. That's the, call it conclusion, but that's also kind of the theorem that we derive from that thing. So now, this is in some way, I hope, or I try to present that in a kind of neutral way, not trying to imply which of them is more likely to be wrong. But of course, one can now start to debate which of these assumptions is not satisfied. Maybe it's not only one, maybe two are not correct. But let me for the moment skip this will just be a personal judgment, but say something that is still interesting about having these three things. So this is just a theorem, and one has to be wrong. Now you can take any view that someone has on quantum mechanics. For example, you can now ask someone who, a Bohmian, who thinks of Bohmian mechanics, and ask himself which of these things is not satisfied according to Bohmian mechanics, for example. And usually people who have a specific view on quantum mechanics have an answer to that. And the answer of the Bohmians is, for example, very clear. The Bohmians actually looked at this whole experiment and did the calculation in Bohmian mechanics. And what they say is that assumption quantum mechanics one is wrong. And the reason why it's wrong is that I'm not allowed in Bohmian mechanics to essentially use quantum theory from the perspective of an agent. This is just not allowed because Bohmian mechanics is a theory of the universe. So the only thing I'm allowed to do is to analyze this whole situation from, so to speak, God's perspective, which in this case would be Wigner and assistant's perspective. So quantum mechanics four statement, and that would still be valid. But these two statements are not allowed within Bohmian mechanics. And indeed, if they do the calculation, they see a disagreement. So in Bohmian mechanics, it turns out if this is tail, then nevertheless W is okay. So they avoid the inconsistency by deviating from textbook quantum mechanics, which is in some way a surprising result, which they found themselves surprising, as far as I was told. But so you can now go to other categories and, for example, ask people that do cubism. And so far, the answer was not completely clear, but they were mostly trying to argue that within quantum Bayesianism, it's not allowed to infer knowledge about oneself via the knowledge of others. So they would say this thing is not satisfied. Anyway, overall, I mean, let's say what happens is so this whole work is available as a preprint, and since I put that online, I got a massive amount of emails, and I could now actually create four folders of the emails, because everyone has an opinion on that. And so I have these four folders, one for the people who disagree with that, one who disagree with that, and one who disagree with that. And there's also a crackpot folder, but that's So to conclude, or to maybe wrap up, what I propose is essentially to consider experiments like that where we try really to do what we actually usually do in quantum theory, namely we apply quantum theory from our own perspective. And we can now ask ourselves, are we consistent if different people apply quantum theory? Of course, this is a very artificial scenario that later we will be measured. Nevertheless, quantum theory doesn't have a rule that a priori that forbids a measurement on another system who could himself or herself have applied quantum theory and have made a prediction. And so if you consider such scenarios, we get, this is like analogous to considering other things like locality or contextuality. So this is kind of a new or a different criterion. We could call it consistency among different agents' view. And this apparently, as this experiment shows, tells us that there are certain limitations on the assumptions we can make or on our understanding. So if we want to hold on consistency, we have to either give up the standard understanding of quantum mechanics, which we could, for example, do by postulating a collapse model, which would just violate this thing, or go to many worlds, which would somehow violate this. But we have to somehow do at least something to circumvent one, or to at least rule out one of these assumptions. And you could also conversely see as a way to categorize interpretations on quantum theory. So at least that's, even if you don't want to take a position of what is a better interpretation, you can, for each possible interpretation, you can apply it to the particular setting and then see which of the assumptions goes wrong. And so far the experience is that there's essentially an equal distribution between this one and this one. And of course, all people believing in many worlds, they are happy with this whole thing because they just say this assumption is obviously violated. But among those who are not in many worlds, there's essentially an equal distribution between this and this. And so in other words, we have now, in some way, an approach to really reason about differences between different interpretations. And in that sense, one shouldn't maybe call these things interpretations because they're really making different statements about the thought experiment. So you could say there's a theory or a rule how to apply quantum theory should be specific about whether I'm allowed to come to these conclusions or whether I'm allowed to do that. But it has to rule out one of them, and I can ask myself which one that is. And therefore, I can make additional statements about interpretations and learn something about them. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for your attention, and I'm happy to answer questions. Yes?
So when F1 sends the spin to the other hand?
Yes.
But I think I've got OK F1 and the scale F1 bases were defined, but they presumably need that spin to be there.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the question is, how was the F1 and F2 basis defined? Now, so the point is that the spin will no longer, so this is the only part that leaves the system. So the spin will no longer be there. So the okay and fail basis here is the state, are defined as the superpositions of the states of the entire lab, but without the spin, in the case where R was tail and in the case where R was head. So you see that maybe, okay, the global state is no longer here, but essentially these states refer to the lab without the spin. That's just by definition. Yes? I don't know, because in my opinion, it's very hard to justify dropping this assumption. Because it really would mean I can never, for example, if I'm told something, and even if I trust the person that she applies the theory, I have a theory of how to predict weather, but I don't want to apply the theory myself, but I let the people at the TV station do that, and I trust they're doing it correctly, I trust their theory, but I would not be able to infer, based on what they tell me, that this is indeed a valid prediction, which would be very strange. So it would essentially, in my opinion, make it impossible to interact with the world. But okay, well, it's still an assumption, of course. I mean, it's not something that follows from pure logic. And that's why it's stated as an assumption. Yes?
So
Yes, that's right. So your point is that this measurement here of R is not compatible with the measurement that is carried out here. Pardon? Yes, so the question is why can we now put things together, because these are different measurements. So the important fact about or aspect of this analysis is that whenever I apply quantum mechanics, I apply it only to a subset of the whole experiment in which everything is compatible. So when I derived this statement, I never used that measurement. And of course, at the end, I put the statements together. But you see, the way I put them together up to here is completely unproblematic, because I'm just making statement about the knowledge of others. So I'm just saying, I mean, for example, I could say you do an analysis of something, you do a measurement in your lab, but I will never go to this lab and do the measurement. Nevertheless, I can say I know what you know about that. And you could say this, of course, in some way it points to the fact that this last step, the self-consistency, tries at the end to combine knowledge that we arrived at by different uses of quantum theory. But it's always the same theory. So if it was not valid, then quantum theory should give us a rule about which things we can combine and which not. And you can, of course, say, I mean, one could understand your question as a criticism towards that assumption, and maybe in that sense answer Veronica's question in principle. Yes. Okay, you're saying this. Yes. So, the statement that you're making that this spin here is mixed is a correct statement. But what I'm trying to stress here is all the statements we are making are always relative to an agent or to an observer. And so it's true that from an outside perspective, so for example, from the perspective of the assistant, before he has measured, this spin is a mixed state. But for example, if I prepare a spin, let's say I prepare now a spin, I decide to prepare it in spin up, then for me, it's a correct description to say that this spin was up, even though it could be that my decision was based on something that happened in the past, which was in a superposition, and there is another branch, if I look at it globally, in which I prepared spin down. I mean, if my preparation of a spin up would not be valid because in the past there was something that may have equally well caused me to prepare a spin down, then I couldn't do physics at all, because whatever I would do would in some way not be related to what I prepared. So it is true that from the outside perspective, this is a mixed state, but from the perspective of one who has the knowledge, it's clearly just a spin up. He prepared it. Of course, you can try to give it up, but then you would not be able to do any quantum physics, I would say. Yes?
Is it possible to make a statement like that you can never get a contradiction with fewer than four parties? So you just talk about three parties, is it possible?
That's a very good question. So I tried for a very long time to simplify this whole thing a bit, because it's still a bit complicated, admittedly. But I have to say, it was initially much more complicated. It involved n parties and then was essentially tending to infinity. And then at some point I realized that I could, actually it's good that you asked, because I forgot to say that the technique or some of the idea is based not only on Wigner's friend experiment, but also on Hardy's experiment and also on Deutsch's versions and on an experiment proposed by Czaslaw Bruckner. So this mixes many things in that were done in the foundations literature together into one experiment. And I tried for a long time to simplify it further, but I failed. But I have no reason to believe that it does not also work for less parties. But I would have no idea how to do it. Maybe first, because he didn't ask already something. Jonathan? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yes. Yes, I. Yes, I mean, so what you are saying is you give an argument why this is a very problematic step within quantum theory.
Why combining all these statements and the notion of self-consistency is really problematic? Calling it self-consistency makes it sound very natural, but
yes.
In this particular context, when a measure is somehow destroyed, saying that it should still have a value in my
use. Yes. I mean, maybe one answer I should give, because this point comes up a lot in discussions, and let's say what the self-consistency generally does is the following abstractly, that if, let's say, some party A1 knows that A2 knows that S is true, let's say that statement S holds, then A1 knows S. So if I say that alone, just as it stands here, without any context of quantum mechanics, then almost everyone agrees with that statement. Now, what you are saying is essentially, if we know already that these statements have been derived within a context of quantum mechanics, but the important thing is these statements no longer refer to measurement outcomes that were not made. So this statement, this could be a statement about an outcome that is accessible to A1. So one, we already got rid of the incompatible measurements at the point where we make this statement. You see here on this line, there is no mentioning of the other outcomes any longer, because I already could get rid of them by combining, just by logical combination of the previous statements. So what, in some way, one could say this statement is completely, sounds completely innocent. And once I tell you, actually, this knowledge has been derived by using quantum theory, you say, now it's a problematic statement. And that's an accept. I mean, yes, I see that view. But I still find it not very attractive, because it would mean that we have to kind of really say that there are different levels of knowing things. There are certain knowledge. There are certain cases. So it really means this general statement is not generally true. For example, it's not true if our knowledge was, we got our knowledge via using quantum theory. And you see, the quantum theory was used in a very, I mean, basic way in some way. So in that sense, I mean, it's a legitimate way of viewing that thing. But I would really like to make the separation between saying, does one really disagree with that general statement? Or do you already agree before that I can get rid? I mean, here in these steps, I got rid of the intermediate incompatible measurement outcomes. But once I'm here, I don't have incompatible measurement outcomes. Of course, I know the knowledge was derived by reasoning about them, but they're no longer there. So if you tell me something, that you know something, and if I don't know how you establish the knowledge, I still want to make, but I trust you did it correctly, but I don't know how. I still want to be able to do that. And what you're saying is that this would not be allowed, which is a way out of this thing, indeed. Yes, Johan? Yes. Yes. So actually, there are many versions, so to speak, of many worlds which still run into problems here. As soon as you assume that branches of the many worlds are still should be consistent in logical reasoning, then you arrive at the same problem. But you could say that you interpret always statements like someone has seen that. You could interpret all these statements as there is a branch in which he has seen that. And then it's completely unproblematic, because then this just means there is a branch in which F1 has seen fail, and there's another branch in which he has seen OK. And actually, those people who who think that there's really a branching and then I stay in one branch in some way should also see that as an argument that rules this thing out. But a very... Yeah. I mean, yes. I'm saying there cannot be a lot. I mean, you cannot have a many-world theory in which you have additional structure that tells you that a branch kind of is coherent in itself. You have to constantly. Yeah. I mean, you arrive at consistency by being able to reason from one branch that about the existence of another branch. That's really what's going on. Yes, yes, I mean, as long, but I still, I mean, of course that would kind of rule out all these things, because if I have a completely unitary description without any additional statements, then a statement like, I have seen R equal tail is not defined in some way. I mean, I could do that, but it would essentially mean that I give up statements I can make based on, for example, I can no longer make a statement that I prepare a spin up, and it was, the outcome was up, because even preparing a spin up is maybe just in one branch of the unitary, and it's not a correct description. And I mean, I'm not sure I completely understood what you mean, but only talking about unitaries doesn't allow me to make any statements of that form at all. So I have, if I want, maybe I could say that as soon as I have unitary evolution, but in addition, I want to have some minimum structure that allows me to talk about measurement outcomes, at least, I mean, not in a global way, but relative to observers. That's the only thing I require here. I mean, I'm not, you're never saying that let's say there is there's a global truth what R is. I'm just saying in some way, I mean, this was explicit that these people, so for example, when I'm saying, here R is tail, this just means F1 sees tail. And I want to somehow be able to model, to make sense of that statement within the theory. And in a purely unitary theory, the statement that F1 sees tail cannot be formulated, or I don't know how it can be formulated.
Don't you just formulate it by saying that F1, there's two states of F1 where it's like it has seen tails or it has seen heads, and then it gets entangled with either one of the, you know, like this state goes from F before it's
yes.
Ready to look at it.
And so you're saying, I mean, what you're saying is essentially I can just prescribe that only the outside view is a valid view. And that, yes, that, okay, maybe it's that what you mean. That's a consistent view, but it would disallow me to use quantum theory myself, because I always have to, I mean, whatever I do in a lab is exactly resulting in a description of that form, like this one. So, of course, I can say there's everything consistent if I only look at the world from the outside. That's maybe the better answer to your question. I mean, that is consistent, but then I've not, in this theory, I've never a statement about what I see in the world. Maybe one shouldn't make that such a statement, but then that's actually all the statements we ever make when we analyze an experiment are about subsystems, so we never talk about universe. So it would be essentially an unusable theory in some way. So maybe one could say these assumptions are based on the fact that we use quantum theory in that way. And one could interpret this result as it's not allowed to use it in the way we do, but that would be strange because it's a very successful theory. Yes? Aha, yes. I probably didn't now do it consequently, but I wanted to stress the fact that this person here is going to be measured. So there is no guarantee that the knowledge he has about which state was prepared still persists here.
So you could define like a version of the SC postulate that's only about persistent knowledge, and that would be okay.
That may be possible, although yes, I mean, I was once thinking about that, and it's hard to define even what persistency means. Because one problem you have is as soon as you try to define persistency, so you have here in some way what this thing shows is that from the outside perspective, the spin that is prepared here just flips. I mean, that's what, for example, the Bohmians say. They say that this thing is just wrong because the spin flips. Now this shows that apparently, if you take an outside perspective, things can just change their state. And now if I want to assume persist, or that even make a statement about knowledge, I implicitly assume the existence of some memories. But once I've shown that a spin can just flip, then why should a memory be stable? So I get into problems in even defining it properly. But it's an interesting thought, and I don't have a full answer to that. Yes?
So within the larger set of experiments, are there actually, is this still a possibility?
Sorry, is this still a You're saying if I want to kind of classify different approaches to quantum theory. No, this is in no way a complete, no, that was also not the purpose. I'm just saying the fact that I have here three assumptions makes it possible to do this maybe quite coarse-grained subdivision of approaches to quantum theory into opinions about quantum theory, I should say, into people who believe this is wrong and people who think this is wrong, or this is wrong, or maybe even the whole, I mean, there are also people who are saying that I'm just not allowed to do such an argument for some reason, but yeah, then it's not so clear, then one cannot identify where they think something is wrong. Yes? So the question is, does it take into account that we are part of the reasoning process? Yes, so in some way, what this I'm not sure I fully understand what is meant, but in some way, I would say, yes, that's the whole, one important point about this is that we actually apply the theory. So here we apply, for example, Wigner applies quantum theory to make an argument about a system which itself is a system that applies quantum theory to do an analysis. So in that sense, yes, we take here, I mean, if I'm, for example, F2, it's taken into account here that someone else may reason about my reasoning process. So it somehow takes into account that physical reasoning takes place in physics itself. And I think that's probably what is meant by that. So it's really, we cannot, so it, this argument wouldn't work if you say that reasoning about physics takes place outside of physics. It's an important part that this is not the case, that if you want to reason about physical things, we do that within physics, and that imposes exactly. That's the reason why we get these limitations. And so I would say it's even the central point of it. Yes, if there are no more questions, then I would like to thank you again for the